Scott.
This is Pat. Got a great program lined up for you today, so you want to stick around. First, we're going to talk a little bit about the election and what that might mean to you.
We're going to talk with the founder of iRelaunch. She's going to share with us, how do you start your career all over again?
Through internships. You see the movie The Intern?
That's just like that.
It's still kind of interesting. We'll also take some calls. And finally, we're going to talk about increased retirement savings, particularly if you're self-employed, some steps to do that. So you want to stick around for Hanson McLean.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us on this weekend. Most of you are listening to us radio weekend. Yes. Of course, some are podcast listeners. But both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air and talk about all things related to financial matters. And of course, interesting.
What do you have to, I mean, how do you describe this?
Leading up to the, we actually thought we'd talk about this first segment of the program about the election, what it has been meaning to financial markets, what it could mean to financial markets.
And you're thinking, that's what we need to hear. We need to hear more about the upcoming.
We're not going to talk about who we favor or
who,
if questioning whether things should have come out at certain times they did or any of that stuff. But what's actually been interesting is when we first saw that the FBI said, well, maybe the case isn't quite closed on the emails for Clinton, immediately we saw the financial markets, the stock market particularly, have a bit of a sell-off. Then it came back, but it was like an immediate bit of sell-off. But then in the days following that, we saw a number of down days on the stock market. We saw gold prices rise, like maybe the markets are getting ready for a possible Trump win.
Yes. And there have been a number of articles that say, well, you know, if it's a Clinton presidency, more specifically Hillary Clinton this time.
not Chelsea. Not yet.
That it's more of a known because they've experienced her style and how she works and whether that's good or bad. At least there's some certainty there as to what to expect.
And one thing people don't like uncertainty as a general rule.
That's correct.
Right? And so when you're trying to judge the value of an investment, any kind of investment, the less certain the future is, the more uncertain it feels to you today and the less you're going to pay for something.
Even a future that is flat or bad, if it's predictive, if someone feels that they can have some sort of insight to what's going to happen in the future, oftentimes they will choose the known, almost regardless of the outcome. And I'm not making a political judgment one way or the other.
But for example, let's say you were to buy a commercial building. How about a corner gas station?
Okay.
You're going to buy a corner gas station. And you've got a lease on it for there's a 15-year lease on it for the current tenant in there.
You're
going to think, oh, this thing's 15 years locked in. It's good. I don't have to worry about it.
Much better property versus one that's got a lease for 2 years on it.
Yeah. But look at another one. You're thinking, well, there's a gas station. There's a 6 months left on the lease. I'm not sure if the current tenant wants to continue on. What happens if?
So it isn't as predictive.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what we have seen with
at least the markets.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're
talking about. Yeah.
And invariably, after every election, there'll be some people who call the office next morning and say, get me out.
Regardless of who the winning side is.
And we'll say, get you out of what? You want out of stocks, bonds, real estate, you want out of everything.
So what do you want out?
They don't know what they want out.
They just know that it didn't go in what they thought was the correct manner, and they react to it. So it's, it's interesting. And quite frankly, I have no idea who would be a better president, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Not a clue. I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Well, one is known. One, we have a pretty good idea. And the other one is so out there.
I think I'm an average American, which is...
Well, here's one thing we do know. GDP, a growing economy, is based on two main factors. I don't care how you look at it. Two main factors over a long period of time. Short period of time, the government can monkey things around by increased spending, printing money. Over a long period of time, a growing economy, GDP growth is going to be based upon a growing population, growing labor force, and increased productivity.
Or one outweighs the other, but you need at least one of those.
Those are the two main factors. So if we cut off all immigration, everything else being equal, not good for the economy.
Correct. You've seen it. You've seen it in other economies. You've seen this in other economies where the immigration is slowed in aging population. Yes.
Japan's shrinking in population. Almost zero immigration in Japan.
And it's bad for the economy.
Yeah, so...
But at the same time...
But we're in an interesting time.
What slows down economies?
We currently have... Our productivity gains have waned dramatically, which is kind of surprised me to think of some of the technology tools that we all use today that we didn't 5 or 10 years ago. Yet we still see the productivity gains are not what they used to be.
They're not as strong as they used to be. And we'll talk about the outcomes next week of how the markets actually are reacting to the election.
Yeah. But look, the fact is, for most investors, it's not going to make a difference.
Over the long term?
No.
It doesn't make a difference.
It's not going to make, unless you believe that one president's going to have so much power that it's going to fundamentally change the direction of the country.
I hope not. Regardless of who that person is.
It is strange times, though, right? And we're
I think it's universal.
Universal what? Strange?
Whether you are far left or far right, I think it's universal. Everyone agrees it's pretty strange stuff.
Well, one thing, Pat and I have been doing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for over 20 years now. We've seen lots of different political issues coming and going.
Yeah.
Who controls the house?
And in the markets, you know, they have short-term reactions to it. But at the end of the day, if you get earnings growth, and earnings growth come from an improving economy or GDP, then you have stock prices increase equity prices. Increase.
So hopefully everyone goes to the... Actually, I hope everyone educated goes to the polls. Is that politically incorrect? And I don't mean educated by formal education. I mean, people take the time to understand the issues at hand before they go to the polls.
But, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Anyway, we are going to transition now to our new view of retirement. So in our last few shows, we've had a number of guests on to talk about really kind of work and passion and retirement, because retirement's changing for most of us. I mean, just studies have shown, first of all, baby boomers don't want the same kind of retirement, and nor are the pensions there for most to have the same kind of retirement. Well, this week we've got a fun guest, Carol Fishman Cohen. She's CEO and co-founder of iRelaunch, and she's going to talk about the concept of internships as a way for retirees to get back in the workforce. Those that have either been forced out, which are a great number that get forced out. We've certainly worked with a number of those over the years. Or those that are taking a break. So, Carol Fishman Cohen, thank you for being part of Hanson McLean.
Hi, I'm Scott and Pat. Nice to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you for being part of the program. And I was reading some of your stuff before the program. The internship, the one thing I couldn't help think about was that movie that was out in the last year or so.
With Robert De Niro.
Yeah, with Robert De Niro.
I loved it.
Yes. It's a great way to start this conversation because it's an illustration of how, you know, he's a 70-year-old. We call him the 70-year-old intern. But we deal with people who are 40 and 50-year-old interns and all the way up to, you know, people who are more traditional retirement age.
So this is really interesting because we both have college kids. Kids in college right now. And the things we talk to the kids about is how important internships are these days.
And we have a very formal internship process at our company, Hanson McLean.
For college students.
For college students.
Yes. But it's so important. Mm-hmm. We know for college students these days, boy, for kids, it's no longer just a high school degree. Now it's not even just a college degree. You need to have some work experience and through internship. So what's happening in the workplace as far as internships for people who are older?
Right. So we call them reentry internships or returning professional internships. And these are internships for people who are mid-career or above, who might have taken a career break for elder care or childcare reasons or pursuing a personal interest. And also that group is broadening to include retirees coming out of retirement, veterans transitioning, military spouses, and even, you know, expats repatriating. So a whole range of what we call non-traditional career transitioners. And the concept is very similar to what you're describing for, you know, your college student, the entry-level employee, where we're talking about a short-term non-binding work arrangement where the employer is able to make a hiring decision for a possible permanent role based on an actual work sample that you provide in the internship, and they don't have to make that hiring decision until the internship period is over. So, you know, to the extent the employer attaches risk to hiring from this non-traditional career transitioner pool, the internship lowers the risk.
That makes perfect sense to me. That makes absolutely perfect sense.
But how many employers are...
Yeah, who's doing it? And why are we not doing it? So give me the upside and the downside, right?
Well, actually, you know, it's a very good question. And one of the goals that we have at iRelaunch is that we think that every company that has an active internship program for entry-level employees should run a side-by-side reentry internship program, or they could decide that they want to open up their internship program to the non-traditional candidate. Although, you know, people ask us, are these reentry interns providing competition for people's college age students? And the answer is no, because these reentry internships are usually, you know, mid-level or higher roles. They're internships that are commensurate with the type of experience that people might have, you know, after taking some kind of a career break.
Got it. Well, I think if we look at the low
unemployment,
the low unemployment numbers, I don't think young people should worry about having their jobs taken by older.
Right. So anyway, but get back to your original question. So interestingly, the lead for these programs sort of as an industry has come from Wall Street. So Goldman Sachs piloted the first reentry internship program back in 2008. They call it Returnship. Sara Lee also piloted a program that year, but then Sara Lee got completely reorganized and they went through a restructuring and the program went away in that process. But Goldman's program endured. And then in 2013, J.P. Morgan started a program. And in 2014, Morgan Stanley Credit Suisse and MetLife started programs. So by 2014, we had what we considered an industry embrace of the concept in financial services. And these programs have continued to grow domestically, across business lines, and internationally. So those programs were the first group that we saw, that industry was the first where we saw a lot of activity. And more recently, through actually work that we've done at iRelaunch with the Society of Women Engineers, we started what we called the STEM Reentry Task Force, where in 2016, we had IBM and General Motors and Intel and Johnson Controls and Booz Allen Hamilton and Cummins and Caterpillar, all engineering-based companies and large global companies, start returning professional internship programs for engineers and technical professionals who had taken career breaks, some as long as 20 years.
And these are
at their conference last week.
And Carol, these are mostly women?
Well, yes. So the original concept was focusing on people who had taken intentional career breaks for elder care, child care, other reasons. That population, we don't have an exact number on it nationally, but my company, I relaunched, we run a series of a return to work conference where we've had 5,000 people come to 19 conferences we've run so far. It's 93% women. So the supply Wow. is largely female.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the impetus for, you know, these programs in Wall Street and also in tech, was there were not enough women in mid to senior level roles on Wall Street or at any level role in the tech companies. But men are eligible to apply and participate. I just want to make sure that gets said.
But it's mostly women that are going through these programs.
Well, okay, yeah, here's what's interesting. I mean, I look at my own neighborhood. I know a number of women, highly educated, had a career, took time off for the kids, and then the reentry,
they don't even know
where to start, though, most of them. It's very challenging.
But as soon as the youngest one starts driving and the kids don't need mom or dad anymore, or want mom or dad, my own sister-in-law did exactly this. And it was hard to go back in because everyone's like, well, you haven't worked for 15 or 20 years.
So let's assume this is Carol. So we're talking with Carol Fishman Cohen, CEO and co-founder of iRelaunch. She also has done a great TED talk on how to get back to work after a career break. Over a million people have viewed that, and has written for the Harvard Business Review as well, the 40-year-old intern. So it sounds like this concept of intern was primarily for maybe for women, and now it could be any sex, doesn't really matter, and really age doesn't really matter, right? I mean, is that kind of where things are headed?
That's correct. In fact, some companies now have incorporated veterans into their return to work programs or have run side-by-side programs for veterans. And just last week at the Society of Women Engineers annual conference, we had a panel where we showcased interns who had successfully completed the program and were now in permanent roles. And a person who identified herself as age 57 asked the question about whether there was an upper limit in terms of eligibility for applying for these programs. And a number of the program managers from those companies were in the audience, and they said no upper limit.
Oh, is that right?
So, in terms of age.
So what we've heard from guests on our show is that age doesn't matter. It's all about vitality. It's how you demonstrate your youth, not how old you are.
Well, this is a very important point because we get this question asked all the time. Is there ageism out there? How does that affect me? And we think the greatest antidote to ageism is subject matter expertise. So we tell people, get really up to date in whatever your field is. And then when you're going to events, which you cannot conduct your relaunch from the house. You have to go out and interact with people. So if you're at, for example, a professional association meeting or you're attending a lecture or a panel, when you talk to other people there, you say, did you read this person's latest book? Who's speaking? Or I saw the article that person just came out with. It was really controversial. What did you think? And so when you have those kinds of conversations, the age piece recedes because it's more focused on the subject matter, and they can see you're really up to date. Plus, you don't have to have those awkward, you know, small talk conversations. It can be all around ideas and the latest thinking in the field. And so we think that is what makes people most effective in these situations, regardless of their age.
That is brilliant. And the reason is it demonstrates not only knowledge, but wisdom. And what we find with more experienced employees, which oftentimes means older, is that they actually get wiser. I mean, with age, they just on just how to deal with, as I tell my kids, the most important thing in business or in school is to figure out what you should pay attention to and what you shouldn't pay attention to. That's the most important thing, not the second most important thing.
Can I just say one more quick thing? Because you said something about your own company. Why haven't we thought about this?
You're our guest. You can say whatever you'd like.
We have just embarked on an initiative that's very similar to the STEM Reentry Task Force that we're doing with the Society of Women Engineers, but we are doing it with the Certified Financial Planner Board Center for Financial Planning, we have announced a financial planner reentry initiative where we're getting a group of financial planner, financial advisory companies together to pilot reentry internship programs at the same time in the 2017 year in the financial advisory sector. So just wanted to make you
aware.
So
we would be great hypocrites if we not actually followed this and did something here.
But, so, Carol, I have a
think about.
Are they on this in this reentry program? Are those mostly women as well?
Okay, so each company runs their own program,
okay.
And the programs they're all paid, and the length and time can range from 9 weeks to 6 months, depending on the company. And some companies run them in a very specific geographic area, and some of them run it in more than one, and then we've seen them grow. So we are right now seeing primarily female participants in these programs, but as I mentioned, men are eligible to apply and participate. And as we look at data about millennials, there was a recent study by Manpower Group on millennials saying 84% of millennials, male and female, are anticipating career breaks at some point. So we think the millennial population, male and female, are going to be taking career breaks going forward.
I believe
so. And we'll see more and more men in these roles.
Yeah, so, I don't know if you saw it. Ken Dykewild of AgeWave is one of the experts on the changing demographics. Now we're aging longer. He's got a great graph that shows if most of us have this longevity bonus that we have in our lives now, where we've got some added time, do we want that necessarily that last to be all be in our older periods of life, or do we want that somehow spread out throughout our lives? And I think for most of us, like, wow, if we can actually have it so that we could take some time off in the middle of our life and then reenter work and have a I mean, and I think that's the kind of things that millennials embrace. And I've talked to some millennials who've done things like that. And it sounds insane when you talk to a baby boomer about why would I want to quit? You're going to tell me to quit my job at age 52. But it'll be interesting to see. And what you're leaning into here, maybe leading here, Carol, is this as a way for people to get back into the workforce where, the employer's not taking on all the, I mean, neither, they're both sharing in some of the risk here and both having a period of learning where we're not saying, let's date for a while before we get married.
Well, let me tell you what's so compelling is that the conversion rates of each cohort, what percentage of the people in each cohort of interns, because they usually experience it as a group, convert to permanent or long-term hires, and the numbers are 50% to 100% depending on the company and the cohort, which I find unbelievably compelling. So a company would know that they're going to yield at least half of their group into permanent or long-term roles if they run one of these programs from the data we've seen so far.
That makes perfect sense. The idea of women in this reentry program for in financial services, CFP, it is great because women are underrepresented in financial services, grossly underrepresented,
they can make great advice.
It is not a very diverse group. Oh, you've been to the conferences for financial services. It's not a very diverse group of people. But women, as a percentage of our financial advisors, we have a relatively high percentage of women financial advisors, but they're hard to find good women financial advisors as an employer. They're very, very difficult to find.
So I've got a question here for you, Carol, because this is the kind of thing that we deal with. 58-year-old male, let's say, plan on retiring in 5 years, loses his job. We see a lot of people like this, right? And how does someone like that take advantage of an internship program? Because oftentimes it'll derail their retirement. They need a few more years for savings, and suddenly they're cut out. So how could something like an internship program get back in? And how would they go about this, probably even more importantly?
Well, the way a lot of these programs are structured is that they're targeting people who took an intentional career break of 2 years or more to be even eligible to apply. But let's put that aside for a minute, because the internship is just a label, and we're talking about any short-term non-binding work opportunity, which could be a contract role, a special project, a temp job. So we call them relaunchers, people returning to work after a career break. Even if it's not a voluntary career break, don't shy away from the temp jobs, temp opportunities, because that gets you in the door. It essentially operates in the same way as an internship. So maybe the person you describe is not eligible for one of these formal programs because they require a clean career break of 2 years or more. But maybe the person starts back in as a temp. They get to be a known quantity, and then they can get hired through that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing some cool work here, Carol, and much needed. And the workplace is changing, retirement's changing, and I think it's neat what you're doing.
And you can visit Carol Fishman Cohen's website at irelaunch.com.
But of course, as usual, there'll be a link on our website at moneymatters.com where it'll take you right to Carol. So, Carol, appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Scott. Thanks, Pat. It was wonderful to be on.
Thanks. And again, if you go to moneymatters.com, and you'll find the link to iRelaunch. And
that's great.
You know, I tell you, how many times, Pat, do we talk to retirees? They've got the financial resources, right? They don't need the money. It's been a few years, and they're thinking, I'd like to be engaged somehow. I'm not quite sure where.
Doing something productive.
This might be a kind of a cool way for them to...
And especially, Scott, we talked about earlier, people that are just returning to the workforce after raising their children, be it man or woman.
Mostly women. But there are some men.
I know a number of men that have done it.
A number?
Yeah.
A number of men that have been stay-home dads.
Well, one's a number.
Okay, thank you. All right. It's not that common. I understand it does happen. Anyway, pretty interesting. We're going to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
And if you would like to join the program, we'll take some calls here shortly. So if you'd like to join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. Anything financially related, would love to chat about. Again, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON, and we'll get you on the program here.
And answer your financial questions.
Yes.
So here's a form of financial planning. I came across this article in the Seattle Times. I don't know why it was in the Seattle Times.
When are you reading the Seattle Times?
At the top there.
Okay. Someone found it for you.
Someone found this. Well, I read it. I don't read the Seattle Times.
Not that there's anything wrong with the Seattle Times.
I don't live in Seattle.
If you lived in Seattle, you'd probably read the Seattle
Times. I would probably read the Seattle Times and listen to grunge rock and drink more mochas. But I don't live in Seattle.
Are they still grunge rockers? That was in the 90s.
I don't know what they do in Seattle. But I do like Seattle. I've visited there a few times with my family.
Okay,
we've had a great time. But
dinner at the Space Needle is just something.
Actually, dinner at the Space Needle was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun.
My brother-in-law worked there right after college.
Really?
He was trying to get a job as a shipping pilot. Those guys, you know, when they bring the big ships in, the little boat goes out.
A pilot.
Yeah. They'll bring the boat into the harbors. And he tried 6 years. It's just so heavily union controlled and so difficult to get the... He has a degree in marine biology or something like that.
Qualified him as a waiter at the Space Needle.
He was doing everything he can. He finally gave up and got a job in technology.
He did.
Yeah.
So
married and kids, the whole thing now.
Anyway, but that has nothing.
But he was a waiter for the space.
That has nothing.
We're way off topic.
Nothing to do with the financial planning tip that this gentleman did. So here's the title. Man pleads guilty to burying mom in backyard to keep retirement checks. So this gentleman, Brian Adams.
Gentleman's a strong word.
This guy, Brian Adams.
That is not a gentleman. A gentleman would not bury his mother in the backyard.
A Brian Adams buried his mother. Not the singer, but Brian Adams, not the singer, buried his mother in the backyard. She died of natural causes in July of 2014. He buried his mother in the backyard so that he could continue to get the Social Security and pension payment checks. So... $35,000
is what he collected
for this. He gets 12 years of free room and board for this. Federal prison.
How bizarre is that? I know retirement income can be tough on people. But
that's just not the way to go.
To bury your mother
in the backyard.
Backyard.
Saving all that money on the expense of the funeral and collecting the pension check for all those many years. So don't do that.
It's because what happens, Social Security gets notified through, I think it's the county, the death certificates. They get notified.
But there was,
it doesn't take them any time to stop that check.
I know,
they're
but
pretty good at it.
I imagine there was no death certificate here.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
There's no death certificate.
He just buried mom in the backyard.
High, pretend like she didn't, I don't know what he told the neighbors.
I don't know.
Oh, she's out on a trip. Long trip.
So.
Anyway, don't not a good that. Idea. And it could be Bryan Adams, the singer. We don't know. This article doesn't specify. Bryan Adams, 56-year-old. It's about the right age for Bryan Adams.
I don't remember.
Wasn't he from like the 80s?
Who was he? I don't remember what band he was in. But
I don't know either. That's okay. And don't call letting us know. We're just kind of,
we don't
just,
care.
Well, it's not that we don't
Bryan care. Adams. I don't care. But I do not care. Okay, let's take some calls.
Yes.
If you'd like to join the show, call us at 888-2-HANSON. That's H-A-N-S-O-N. Or you can go on our website, moneymatters.com.
Yeah. And we're talking with Hank. Hank, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Hank.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Hey, maybe Bryan Adams worked for Dorothea Puente back in the day. But
that's right. The lady who...
Sacramento lore for you.
That's yes, right. That's buried right. all those. Yeah,
they were. She owned a rooming house in Sacramento.
That was what, like 1989 or something. Wasn't it?
It was before then.
Yeah, downtown somewhere. I think people are still driving by.
Yeah, but, exactly. So your question
for
us?
Take my call.
See, only we can talk about off topic when you call. Oh, wait a minute.
Okay,
you can't talk about off topic. Only the guest. Only the host. Okay.
Okay. This is a two-parter. The first one's pretty straightforward. Second one might be a little more complicated. It's just let's look at five benefactors. Four of them are millennials, 18 to they'll be in their 20s when this goes down.
What's going down? I'm confused here.
And what's going down? They're going to be benefactors of a will and or beneficiaries, I should say. And they're each going to get $250,000.
Did someone pass away or is this in the future?
Someone's going to, yeah, and it's a state that's going to be settled probably within the next 2 or 3 years. So they're each going to get $250,000. They'll have some college debts. They're probably going to be middle class kind of people as I see their careers, whatever that means or is going to mean. And they're probably going to have about $200,000 just to do something with. And I'd like your recommendation on what a millennial should do with $200,000 for their future.
Can I get real deep on this from Hank? Is this your estate? Do you have a terminal illness that you want to make sure you're setting this thing up correctly? Or
yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah, no, that's all. It's all been set up. Basically, I'm going to be one of the co-executors.
Okay. Okay.
And so that's going to go on to that set. Now, my second question, which gets a little more involved, is
can we stop at the first, and
sure.
then we'll get in the second one. So the answer sure. to your first question is the person deceased at this point in time. That's leaving the money.
No.
Okay. Are they able to make financial decisions on their own behalf at this point in time?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what you want to do. You want to step back for a minute and go to the person whose estate it is. And you want to put some restrictions in the trust as to how these kids are going to get the money.
Yes.
So rather than what's going to happen with the money once they get it,
If they get it all, it's all their choice.
And you said the kids are between 18 and 20, what?
Yeah, they're all going to be about, yeah, they'll be in their early 20s when this
Okay, early 20s. So what you want to, I'll just tell you how mine is set up. So I have four children. Right now, the oldest is 20, the youngest is 16. If something were to happen to my wife and myself, the money would be doled out to these children on a very formulaic, very much following a formula that limits how much they're going to get at any one time and puts restrictions on them because they're young and immature. The teenage brain doesn't quit developing until, some 25 years of age. So you don't want them, you don't want to give a 20-year-old a $250,000 because it could be the worst thing you ever did to that 20-year-old. It may cause them to quit going to college. It may cause them to actually make poor decisions. It may cause them to pursue a lifestyle that isn't good for them. So the way you address that is from the trustee standpoint, which is, how's this money going to be doled out? How's the money going to be doled out? Don't worry so much about the investments right now, but how the money, and you can choose a trustee for these children where the money is actually managed by the trustee. And then you actually put restrictions
on it. My trust is set up very similar. Something happens to my wife and myself. Both my kids are of legal age, but the last thing I'd want them to do is to have them receive their full inheritance when we pass away. So we have many restrictions, and it's all spelled out in the trust. So our recommendation is for you to be working with that individual and talking about what kind of parameters you want in place and what money. So you might say, we're fine with letting them take $200,000 to put down towards a house, but we're not okay for them to take $50,000 and take a trip to around the world for 4 months. Yeah.
So that's the answer to the first question. Now let's move on to the second question you had, I think, which regarded yourself.
Okay, yeah. Or let's just say the other major beneficiary. If they, so they, it appears, would get roughly $1 million. And a third of it would be coming in a rolled over IRA.
Okay.
So, okay, two-part question. One, with the IRA, and I'll get to that second, but the first question is, if they did a third in the IRA, this particular person for some reason wants to literally buy a house with a third of their cash and then keep a third of their cash using what they seem to call like a one-third, one-third, one-third kind of principle. First question is, does that make sense to buy a house as opposed to finance it? And then does that overall strategy make sense? And what would you do with the cash besides just let it sit?
Okay, so of this $1 million.
I have an IRA question that we can go back to.
Yeah, of this $1 million, right?
Yeah.
How much of it is in the IRA?
He said it'd be about a third of it.
So 300, you probably
about a
would.
Third of it. It's probably going to be about 350 grand.
So here, two issues here to discuss. First of all, when someone inherits money, what we found is when people inherit money, they don't treat it exactly the same as when they've earned it. That's just reality. Yeah. We've also seen a lot of people come into cash and have never had the experience, a personal experience, of investing their own dollars where they've had not only successes, but losses as well. So it's a challenging thing when someone inherits money. Oftentimes when we talk with somebody, and oftentimes it'll be clients of Hanson McLean who's passed away, and we're talking with the beneficiaries, oftentimes we'll say, look, why don't you look at paying off your house or buying a home if you don't own a home, buy a home outright with the cash. I think it makes tremendous sense because the average person can understand that. And if we don't have a mortgage payment, it just makes it easier. Now, in regards to the IRA,
you're not going to want to use the IRA to purchase a home in most circumstances, unless that person has zero income. So appreciate the call.
Yeah. And they would need to start taking some distributions on the, but I'd also, if someone inherits $1 million, I'd highly recommend they go talk with a financial advisor. If you want to be part of Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're going to talk with Ruth. Ruth, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Ruth.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What's up?
I'm considering a move overseas, for example, selling my house and buying another house. And I'm retired. I'm 64. I get Medicare next year. So I was thinking of moving within the next 2 years.
And where are you going to move to?
France.
Okay. Do you have family there?
No, I have friends.
Okay.
And you've spent a considerable amount of time there, I assume, all in a row, more than like 3 weeks at a time?
Not yet. I'm planning to do a home exchange next year.
Perfect. For how long?
A month or two, depending upon what I can arrange.
Okay. Yeah.
That's okay. Perfect.
Perfect. And I would recommend, before you decide to move there, at least 2 trips of 3 months each. That would be my recommendation, because it is a big, big, big decision.
Oh, yeah. Moving overseas is much different, particularly if you're going to sell your house. You live where? In Northern California. Sell your house in Northern California and move to France, which can certainly be done. I mean, in particular, if you own your home outright and since you live in Pleasant Hill, North Bay Area, it's high home prices. But the challenge is, once you make that move, it could be very difficult to come back, because we've got currency fluctuations. Who knows what's going to happen with currency in the next couple of years? Housing prices can change, where you suddenly get, you want to come back to Northern California, you're priced out, and that sort of thing. So it could certainly be done. How can we most help you right now?
Well, there's a lot to consider, whether or not if I sell a house here or just go and live there and rent my house here and buy one over there. So there's tax considerations and all kinds of stuff that you were talking about. So if I did sell my house, I think I'd have to be paying a certain amount of federal taxes.
Yeah, you've got some exemption, but there's going to be some capital gain taxes, but $250,000 is free. So if you're single, mm-hmm. Were you married before? Have you been widowed or divorced or been single?
I'm single.
Okay,
yeah, so I do have a child, but I don't have to worry about a partner.
Got it. And it might be the best thing you could do. It might be a fantastic idea for you. We don't know yet. So the couple things. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to talk to a tax specialist who specializes in people living overseas. There are people out there that's what they do. And it's usually with one of the big firms, and they're not going to be the least expensive accountants, but it might be worth the time to run some of these concepts by them. But I'm with Pat here. I would, if you were my older sister,
I'd say go slow. And
I'd say, Ruth, go rent out your house for a year,
for maybe 2 years. And go rent over there before you jump all in. I actually have a brother that lived in France for 2 years. And this is exactly what he did. Was he engaged a firm that specialized in international tax law, with a specialty in France versus the U.S. as to how income would be recognized. And he had a placeholder here in the U.S. And by a placeholder, I mean he had a house that he could actually return to at any time. And that's the recommendation I would.
Yeah, we would start there.
Before I got deep into the finances, because right now it looks like a beautiful brochure, but sometimes it doesn't turn out that way. You get over there and you realize, hey, you know, I love the French, but anyway, we appreciate the call.
Yeah, and good luck to you, Ruth. And it might be the best thing you could do. We don't know. But what we have seen enough of, people at retirement stage that have had some dream to move somewhere, they move there, and after a period of time, they realize it's not what they thought it was going to be and end up moving back. So we don't want to make too drastic of changes before we do that. So anyway, thanks for the call, Ruth. Greatly appreciate it. And let's talk real advice with Hansen McLean. So during this portion of our program, we talk with a financial advisor of Hansen McLean and talk about some sort of story that with working with the client. It's basically it's real. But, you know, so part of the reason we do this, just to give you an example of why we do these things, sometimes financial planning can get quite complicated and quite tricky. There's some industry regulations that state that investment advisory firms, fiduciary investment advisory firms, registered investment advisory firms, firms like Hansen McLean, we can't use client testimonials. So we can't have a client come on and say, here's my problem. Here's what my problem was, and here's how Hansen McLean worked with it. So, but So we can't do that. So we do have advisors, our own Hanson McLean advisors, just kind of walk through stories to give you a better understanding of how we can help and how we have helped and how a financial advisor, a good financial advisor, can help an individual or a couple or family plan through some of their finances.
But
and
your experience may differ than the one that is shared today.
That's right. And so today we're talking with Lori Cairo. And Lori is a financial advisor and a certified fund specialist. She's an advisor with Hanson McLean. She's been with Hanson McLean for, I think, over 6 years. And she works out of our Northern California Roseville office. And Lori, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean today.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, and Lori's a great advisor and done a lot of things. So tell us about the situation you were recently working with and what the issue was here.
Oh, sure. Well, I had a couple come in, and they were looking for just kind of a review to see if they were on track for retirement. They've been working with a family member as their advisor for a number of years. He is 55 years old, and she's 56. They own their own PR consulting firm, and they were in a position now where their youngest child had gone to college. They have more expendable income, and they were wanting to save additional money for retirement for themselves.
And this is pretty common, isn't it? When someone's they're now empty nesters and they're like mid-50s thinking, uh-oh, are we on track or not on track?
Do we need to kick it into high gear or can we float from here on out?
Yeah.
And that's pretty normal.
Right. Right. And for their plan, you know, previous years was to make a $6,500 deductible IRA contribution for each of them. And that was what they were, their perception was that was the most they can do. And that was all they were saving for retirement. So they figured they were, you know, maybe on track because what they were doing. But
wow.
Based on their plan, they were a little short on retirement funds. So we were trying to explore different avenues and where they could possibly save some additional funds
and
for themselves.
Self-employed, obviously no pension.
Correct.
And
yeah.
What was the annual income for the two of them?
Over $250,000.
So they had the ability to save more.
Yes.
And what were your recommendations?
Well, you know, we have a 401k division here at Hanson McLean, of course, that helps us in these situations to, you know, see how we can put a plan together with their business. They had one part-time employee, but for the two of them to be able to open a IRA or start a 401k plan for their business really gave them the ability to defer much more for retirement for each of them, as well as provide, you know, a match and use some of their retained earnings in the business to, you know, flow into their retirement account.
Why didn't they have a 401k before this?
It just wasn't, proposed to them or wasn't put out there. They wondered themselves after we met, they were scratching their heads as, I wonder why we never did this before. We should have been doing this for years before. And it just kind of a light bulb went on with both of them.
Yeah, particularly then high income.
Yeah, they could get between the two of them and doing Roth, they could probably get $90,000 plus with a good match 401k and... No, not that
right,
high.
And,
could they, Scott?
No, it would be max. Their 401k wouldn't be quite that much. Maybe $60,000 a year.
Okay.
Between the two.
Right, and they can do profit sharing. You know, for the business, they have the profit sharing there too, so they can, you know, flow additional money in for themselves.
So they could have been saving substantially more money, and they had an advisor at this point in time when you actually recommended it.
Well, it was a family member that was investing some funds for them, so I think that they were, he's assisting them in their investing. I don't know that he was necessarily advising on a full plan or kind of putting a plan together
for
what they would be on track for.
Nice families.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then what? They're on platinum track for retirement now.
Right. So now they're, you know, on track for retirement. They originally, on their original plan, we had done a proposal where with their current balance of their IRA, their $6,500 each contribution per year, they would have had about, about $1.3 million between the two of them in 15 years. They don't really plan to have a drop dead date for retirement, but they're thinking that maybe it's between 65 and 70, they're going to transition out of the business. But now with their plan that we put in place for them with additional funds to their 401k, they'll most likely have near about $2.4 million at retirement. And the majority of their retirement assets or income will come from their personal assets at that time.
Well, hey, well, thanks, Lori, for bringing us through that. And that's one thing that's often overlooked is the retirement plans for self-employed people
are a lot of flexibility in your choices if you're self-employed for retirement plans.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing that with us, Lori. Appreciate it very much. And it's interesting, Pat, is people, you know, these are people who are consultants, PR consultants.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people like that don't necessarily want to quit working altogether.
They just need to save for retirement because they don't know when they might have to.
You never know what tomorrow brings, right? I mean, roughly one out of two of us are forced into retirement prior to us planning on it because of some extenuating circumstance, something happens, a health issue, for example.
Yeah. Especially this situation where they had
I have some really good friends that he retired early. She had a health issue that shortened her life expectancy, and he was in his 50s, wasn't planning on retiring, but he kind of looked at things. He says, I remember we talked about it. He says, I don't know how much longer we'll have together. So he retired early to be able to spend the time with his wife.
Well, that's nice.
Where he would have otherwise worked for who knows how many more years. But I think life happens, right?
Yeah. Things happen that are unanticipated. So you have to actually start with the goal in mind that you're going to retire. Whether you retire or not is a completely different decision once you get there.
Yeah.
Once you get there. But the reality is, as Lori pointed out, that if you're self-employed, especially if they had one part-time employee, there are lots and lots of different retirement plans, low-cost retirement plans for self-employed people that you might get investment advice from a discount broker, but you're not getting financial advice.
So if you have a small business or self-employed and you want to save for retirement, a lot of these plans need to get set up before the end of the year, before the end of the calendar year.
It doesn't mean they need to be funded before the end of this calendar year, but they have to be in place by 12/31.
So actually, some of them you can set up by December 31st of this year, you might have as late as till October 15th of next year to fund the plan. But there are plans, and we've seen some people where we've set aside lots of money for their retirement by setting up what's called a solo K. Or there's a variety of different types of plans out there that make sense for people to look into. And that's not, for whatever reason, we don't see people using those as often. But
they're pretty easy to set up.
Yeah. And you talk to your advisor about it. You know, it was his family member, close family member.
Brother-in-law.
Yeah. One of the reasons I was talking to someone the other day. I said, I never approach my friends. I have a number of friends that are clients here at the firm that work with a different advisor. But even when I started, I was like, I never want to be that person that's hitting up my friends or family.
I've done it with family members that I thought really needed the help. I said, you really need the help.
Well, I'll talk to them about it. But then I said, you need to implement it with somebody else, not with me, because you're going to get a different kind of relationship with it.
Well, correct. Someone in our firm, not with me personally.
Yeah. So anyway, the music means that we're out of time. I encourage you to visit moneymatters.com there's just lots of great stuff there. You can get a podcast of this program right at moneymatters.com. If you're not getting it now, go for that. Also, my book, Personal Decision Points, grab that at moneymatters.com. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.